Meeting of the House State Affairs Committee will come to order. Time is 3:02 on March 2nd, 2023. Members present, Representative Carpenter. Representative Johnson is walking through the door. Representative Allard, Representative Armstrong. Vice Chair Wright and myself, Rep. Shaw. We have a quorum. Please silence your cell phones. If anyone in the audience today needs to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of my staff, Josh Walton, and he will take care of it. I'd like to thank our secretary, Sophia Tenney, and Lisa Denny for teleconferencing, as I call them, the Tenney and Denny team. Our first order of business is House Joint Resolution 3, encouraging Congress to pass the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, sponsored by Representative Rauscher. It's the first hearing for this bill. Our intention is to hear it, take invited testimony, and hold it over. I'd like to invite the sponsor of the table and to present the bill along with the staff, Ryan McKee. Representative Rauscher, could you, welcome to the House State Affairs. Could you please put yourself on the record and present your testimony?
For the record, my name is George Rauscher, Representative, District 29. I want to thank Chairman Shaw and the members of the State Affairs Committee for hearing H.J.R. 3. House Joint Resolution 3 would encourage Congress to amend the Federal Criminal Code to allow an individual who is qualified to carry or possess a concealed handgun in one state to be allowed also to carry or possess a concealed handgun in another state that also allows individuals to carry concealed firearms. This resolution would also request that Congress enact the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, H.R. 38 from the 117th Congress or any similar bill thereof. The NRA of America, Institute for Legislative Action, has provided multiple reasons for supporting national reciprocity. Some of the examples are listed, and they are: the Supreme Court affirmed in 2008 that the Americans have constitutionally protected individuals' rights to keep and bear arms for self-defense, and furthermore, that no state can deny a constitutional right. So, to concealed carry permit holders are among the most law-abiding citizens in the country. In 2014, study from the Crime Prevention Research Center showed that between 2008 and 2014, out of 875,000 Floridian permit holders, the rate of revocation, the rate of concealed carriers who had their permits revoked, in other words, was 0.00007%. And in Texas, a state with 584,850 permit holders, the rate was 0.021%. Who were ever convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony. Reciprocity laws can change frequency with little or no notice at all. With a little public notice, otherwise, law-abiding citizens are at a much greater risk of becoming accidental criminals. Other citizens are often just unaware that they cannot drive through certain states with a concealed weapon. One such person was Brian Fletcher, who, while traveling from North Carolina to New Jersey to do disaster relief work, and that would be like the Samaritan's Purse, they kind of go all over the country doing flood mitigation or whatever, or tornadoes. But anyway, he was doing disaster relief work, volunteered the information about his legally owned firearm to the police officer in New Jersey. He was arrested and subsequently faced 5 years in prison. For other detailed reasons and some other information on why members should support HJR 3, I'd like to turn the, I'm going to turn this over to my first staffer,
Ryan McKee. It's been a long day.
Ryan McKee, thank you very much.
For the record, Ryan McKee, Chief of Staff to Representative George Rauscher. We had some questions in the last committee on specifically what rules people had to abide by. Were they bound by just their state rules? And when they got to other states, they didn't have to follow those rules. So just to clarify, if a person enters a state, and has a permit from their home state to legally carry, they do still have to abide by the rules of that state that they're currently in. Some of the more extreme examples are California, which is a may grant you state, as in you can apply for a permit, you can do everything right, but if they don't actually deem that you, that they think you should be able to have a permit as a local resident, you won't get one. So, but with, if a citizen does come in from out of state, if this law were to pass, they would have to follow the same rules as those that the California, the state of California deems able to carry a handgun. They would have to abide by those rules. Compared to Alaska then, which is on the opposite end, where they don't require a permit to conceal and carry. So then people coming from other states would have to follow our rules, which are a little bit more lax than those of other states like California. And so that was just one of the big questions that came up in the last committee.
We are open to questions.
Thank you for the presentation. And are there any questions from the committee? Representative Armstrong.
Thank you, Rep. Rauscher. I'm curious, was this inspired by something that happened in Alaska, or were there any Alaskans affected, or what was kind of the genesis of the bill or the resolution? Right. Through the chair, I apologize.
And this is Representative Rauscher for the, on the record through the chair to Representative Armstrong. This is not really in particular to any particular case that there is. What it is there are people who want to carry in other states, and they don't want to have to test in each one of those states that they are allowed to open carry in. In other words, this is the reciprocity says that you're not going to have to retest all the time. You're still going to have to obey the laws within these states that you are in. And those that say you can't, you have to obey also. But the idea is once you're in a state that also has this type of an open carry policy, you don't have to take the test and all that just to drive through with a firearm on you in that way. If, does that answer your question? But it doesn't really pertain to any particular case.
Through the chair, just out of curiosity, because I don't know a lot about this, if I'm an Alaskan and for some reason I wanted to go hunting in another place, I don't know why you would, but if you wanted to go hunting with your friends in Montana or Wyoming or something and you bring your gun, can you walk me through the process you have to go through if you wanted to conceal carry there?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher speaking for the record to Representative Armstrong. Basically, if you were to go hunting in another state, there are states that require you to send your guns through a dealer, okay? So you might have to go through that. There are other states that don't care. Like if you were to come to Alaska from another state, just load them up and go, depending on what the regulations are in the state you're leaving from, depending on how you can actually put those into the airport and get them up here. Those are the requirements to do. So each state has their own requirements. And when you visit, say, Montana, a lot of people hunt from Montana, you will have to, your guns will have to arrive there according to the laws in Montana. You have to send, like say you were to go to New Jersey, it would probably have to go through a dealer. Those are my intuitions on that because they're pretty tight about the way they do stuff. Does that answer your question?
I don't know why I gave hunting as an example because it'd be very impressive to conceal carry the kind of gun you need to hunt with. But thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Chair. This is more of a statement, not a question. I want to say I appreciate this legislation. Being a prior military service member, moving to another state, you end up having to get another concealed weapons permit, regardless if you're on orders or not. So I really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Any additional comments, questions from the committee? Seeing none. Brings us to invited testimony. I don't see anybody with invited testimony, so we'll go on to public testimony, and I'll go ahead and open the floor to public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to provide testimony on House Joint Resolution 3? Seeing none. Do we have anyone online who would like to provide testimony? Seeing none. Seeing no one else who would like to testify, I'm closing public testimony on House Joint Resolution 3. With that, before we hold the resolution over, are there any additional questions from committee members on the resolution? Any additional comments from sponsor or staff? Very well. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Representative Rauscher, for the record, to the chair. I would just like to thank the committee for hearing this. This is real. I really appreciate it. And I think this is a law that a lot of people who do carry, a lot of people who do visit other states, a lot of people who do travel through the lower 48 really are looking forward to something like this passing in Washington. And I just wanted a chance to say thank you for hearing this bill.
Thank you. Very well. It's our intention to hold this resolution to a later date. If any members would like to have amendments considered for the resolution, that amendment deadline is at noon on Monday, March 6th. If members would like their amendments considered by the committee, please have it to my office by that time. With that, we will hold House Joint Resolution 3 over and move on to our next item of business. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Our second order of business is House Bill 8, an act relating to electric-assisted bicycles, sponsored by Representative Carrick. It's the second hearing for this bill, and we last heard this bill. We set an amendment deadline this past Monday. We have received no proposed amendments, so we do not have a committee substitute to offer at this time. Before I put the bill to the will of the committee, I'd like to invite the sponsor to the table, along with her staff, Stuart Relay, for any lingering questions from committee members. And if you just go ahead and put yourself on the record and provide any testimony that you feel needed.
Thank you. For the record, Ashley Carrick, House District 35 Representative.
Thank you. For the record, Stuart Relay, Staff Representative Carrick.
And to the chair, I don't believe I have any additional thoughts for the committee, but I am happy to take any questions.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Representative Allard.
You guys are hanging out a lot together through the chair because you're matching. You both have the same sweaters. This is what happens, I guess, after we spend this much time together in Juneau. Yes. It's Thursday, Friday for me. Is there a reason why you guys chose not to add the potentially a scooter assist? I'm trying not to laugh when I say it, to say scooter assist. That you just focused on the e-bike assist?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, just to clarify, so you're discussing electric-assisted scooters? Okay. And I think the primary reason is that we initially, back 5 years ago when this legislation first came forward, the electric-assisted bicycles were sort of an emerging area of recreation, transportation, and there was just such a clear gray area in statute and a clear need to have a definition just for the sake of municipalities and the state. And this legislation was brought forward in response to that. And it just doesn't seem to be quite as lucrative or as emerging of an area in Alaska for the electric-assisted scooters. And they are not, to my knowledge, sold at retail facilities to the same degree that the electric-assisted bicycles are.
Thank you. And I have one more question, Chair. Thank you. And through the chair, somebody had brought up hunting. And is it possible, and I don't know if we looked into it, where it can be some sort of it become an issue with taking an e-bike. I'm trying not to laugh again. An e-bike assist to go hunting with it. And is it, would it be considered motorized? Because there's some areas you just can't. Mm-hmm. They had brought that up to me, and I thought maybe I should ask you.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Allard. I think that essentially that question might be clarified by what's happening in the Senate version of this bill and the other body. They're adding a provision that allows for DNR to essentially restrict out specific classes of bikes if they choose to. But my intention with this legislation is to have electric bicycles be classified as bicycles and to have them be allowed where bicycles are allowed. So if you can currently hunt using a bicycle, then in my interpretation of this legislation, we would be allowing that with electric bicycles. And I don't see a conflict with that. But again, what we're trying to do here is just to define e-bikes and have that further clarity with the three-class system. And so that gives a range of options for DNR or for municipalities to then further restrict if they or choose to restrict if they would like to.
Follow-up comment, please, Chair.
Follow-up.
Thank you. And through the chair, I think the reason I was asking, not I think, the reason I was asking about the hunting, because if a bike can go 20 miles an hour, I might be able to catch something. That's all. Or kill something. Okay. Thank you.
And through the chair to Representative Allard, I guess I would just respond to that comment and say, I am fully confident that the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Fish and Game can kind of address some of those considerations once they have a definition. Again, the goal here is just to get rid of the gray area that currently exists, and ideally to have, in most situations, e-bikes be considered bicycles.
An e-bike, my bow and arrow, I'm ready to go. All right, thank you.
I have a question. Last year, I was riding my full-pedal bicycle, which is good for exercise, back from the valley, and I saw someone pushing their e-bike up that little hill by the hospital. There's no chance that we're going to end up with bicycle charging stations along the way, are there?
Oh.
To the chair, Representative Shaw, I don't think so, because without, I guess, the full knowledge of where the electric bicycle manufacturing industry is going in the future, these are self-contained systems, and you charge them by pedaling them, is my understanding, and so the need for charging stations along a coastal trail or something like that, for example, I think is a moot point with the current technology.
It was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, only because you have to pedal sometime, and I appreciate that. That was my only comment. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Armstrong.
Through the chair, while Rep. Allard is hunting with her bow and arrow, I do have a Costco e-assist scooter that you will catch me riding on the coastal trail this summer. So, just saying.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are, I think even on the Tony Knows Coastal Trail in Anchorage, there are no motorized vehicles. So that would not eliminate bicycles, e-bikes from traveling on that trail. So you're just declassifying them as motorized in a sense.
Yeah. So through the chair, Representative Johnson, a couple points there. So the municipality of Anchorage has actually already adopted this definition system for e-bikes, including the class system that's in this legislation. And on any non-motorized trail system right now in the municipality of Anchorage, including the coastal trail, you can ride an electric bicycle. If the municipality later, or any municipality later, wanted to say, well, actually 28 miles per hour with full assist on the class 3 bikes is too fast, for example, and we want to restrict that out, they can do so. My understanding is that in Anchorage they wanted the clarity around e-bikes as it related to non-motorized trails, and that there have been not a significant pushback on that to then restrict out later. So my understanding, I guess, is that in Anchorage, where they have adopted this language, it's working for them to have electric bicycles on non-motorized trails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions from committee members? Seeing none, what is the will of the committee regarding House Bill 8?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 8, Work Order 33LS 0196 alpha out of committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
I'm just going to take a brief at ease. Without objection, House Bill 8 moves out of House State Affairs with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. For the committee members, please remain after adjournment to complete the bill discharge paperwork. That concludes our business for this hearing. Our next hearing will be Tuesday, March 7th at 3 p.m. With that, this meeting is adjourned at 3:20 p.m.